I'd like to look at Psalm 78 this morning for a little while. This psalm is written by Asaph and attributed to him. And I want to start with verse 1 reading this morning. Psalm 78. He's speaking about a subject here that I really believe needs to be on the minds of God's people very much this day and age. He says, "Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, shewing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, where he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children, and that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children." It's very clear to me that God has given a commandment to his people that he very much desires that the things that he has taught us, the things that God has spoken to us and that he's commanded to us, and that his precepts and commandments that he's given through his word, God is very much expecting you and I to share these things with our children. And if you've ever noticed as you read through the scriptures, very often we see commandments and instructions and admonishments for you and I to do that we might continually remind our children about the great things that our God has done for us. You know, I was thinking a little bit this week about the fact of the society and the time and generation in which we live in right now. We have so many distractions around about us. There's so much noise and so much movement in the world around about us 24 hours a day. So many distractions. I could see how it'd be very easy for a little child of God to get distracted and their minds wander and stray from God's word and from God's kingdom and from his church and that which we should be hearing about God and those things that we should be speaking about God and sharing and reminding one another of. In other words, if we're not careful, the busyness of this world will draw us away from that task. It will keep us from talking and focusing on the things that God says we ought to be thinking about. Now, the psalmist Asaph here is writing, and he's talking about the greatness of God and all of the great things that God has done for his people. But notice how many times he's done mentioned twice now about being sure that we do not hide these things from our children and being sure that the things that God has established in his testimonies that we have shown them, we have made them known to our children, and that even in the generations to come, that even our children will continue to make these things known to their children. Sort of an unbroken thread or an unbroken chain of disseminating and reminding ourselves of the wonderful things that God has done for his people. And verse 7 says that they might set their hope in God. The reason we want to continually share these things and teach these things to our children and to our grandchildren is that our hope, we might set their hope in God, help them to recognize where their hope is. There's so many people today that I think are hoping for so many different things, in their life, and they're looking for help in various places. And so many people, I'm afraid even many of God's people, have their hope set on some political figure. Well, friends, I'm here to tell you this morning, there's just no political figure here that's going to save you and I from the things in this world that we need saving from. There's no political figure anywhere that's going to do that. Our hope must be in God above. And that's what Asaph is talking about here, about being sure we emphasize that to our children, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, that they might not be as many of their fathers were, And he describes them as being a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. You see, throughout the history of the Bible, we find a very clear and concise record of God's people having a great propensity to forget these things about God and to go astray in various ways. We just find that record, it's like a broken record almost, happening over and over and again. So we know for a fact through the history of the Bible that God's given us that not only were many of our forefathers prone to at times forget about God and forget about his great salvation and the great deliverances that God has always provided for his people, not only have they been prone to that, but you and I will be prone to the same things if we're not careful. And Asaph is emphasizing this. He says in verse 10, he's talking about some of the forefathers that not all of them were always faithful and diligent to remember their God and always to be praising him and to placing all their hope and their faith and their trust in God and always passing that along down to their children. Some of them did not always do that. And he's speaking about the ones that did not right here in verse 10. Here is some of the faults and the failures of some of those fathers, the forefathers. He says they kept not the covenant of God and refused to walk in his law. They forgot his works and his wonders that he had shewed them. Marvelous things did he in the sight of their fathers in the land of Egypt and in the field of Zoan. He divided the sea and he caused them to pass through. And he made the waters to stand as a heap. He's talking about the Red Sea here. Now, all of you are familiar with the Israelites crossing the Red Sea when they came out of Egypt. Pharaoh and his armies and his chariots began to vigorously pursue the Israelites, and it looked like he had them hemmed up in a corner, but God did something marvelous. God did something miraculous for his people. He opened up the Red Sea, something that's never been done before, never will be done again unless God does it again. He opened up the Red Sea and the entire nation of Israel went across the Red Sea on dry ground. They stood up like walls of water on either side of them. And of course, you know what happened when Pharaoh pursued them and he chased them in there. And here comes Pharaoh and his chariots. God closed the water back on top of them. This is something that happened when the Israelites came out of Egypt. Asaph is writing about that here, how he divided the sea and he caused them to pass through it safely. And he says, in the daytime also, he led them with a cloud and all the night with a light of fire. You know, I try to imagine what it must have been like for the nation of Israel to come out from under Egyptian bondage after being there 430 years. I mean, that is multiple generations that grew up in Egypt, and they became accustomed to the Egyptian ways and the Egyptian customs themselves. They were used to that. That was home to them. Even though the Egyptians had put the Israelites to hard work and to servitude and had them building bricks and making bricks and building facilities and doing all sorts of hard labor to help profit the Egyptians. That's what Pharaoh was doing to them. That was their comfort zone. And they were there for many, many years. Now, when God decided it was time to bring them out, and God brought them out of that 430-year captivity, I tried to imagine what that must have felt like to the Israelites, and how frightening maybe that must have been. You know, they left in the middle of the night. You remember recently we were talking about the little lamb, the little Passover lamb, of how they had to slay the lamb, take the blood and place it on the door of their homes so God would pass over their homes during the night. When he slew all the firstborn of the Egyptians, including all of their animals and their cattle and everything, and the firstborn of every household died in the night. And that was the final plague where Pharaoh said, enough is enough. He says, you Egyptians, get up and get out of my country. I'm giving you permission to go, but don't wait till the morning. Get up and leave right now in the middle of the night. And so away they went. All of Israel left out. But you know, God didn't leave them. He didn't just take them out of the Egyptian bondage and bring them out in the middle of the desert and leave them. No, he protected them, and God was with them the entire way. God led them by a pillar of a cloud during the day, and by a pillar of fire and light during the nighttime. Whenever they traveled, their God got out in front of them and led them. Well, I want you to know that although you and I are not able to see God with our natural eyes today, I hope you know this morning he's the same God. He has not changed. He's still leading his people today in our journeys and our sojournings here in this world. God still leads us in various ways because he cares about his people. He cares deeply about his people. But Asaph here is talking about some of the fathers that so quickly and they so easily forgot some of these things. Verse 17 says that they sinned yet more against him by provoking the Most High in the wilderness. And they tempted God in their heart by asking meat for their lust. Yea, they spake against God, and they said, can God furnish a table in the wilderness? Can God really do that? We just came out of Egypt, and we were under hard labor. We were under servitude. We were under bondage. But you know, that was our life, and we had plenty to eat. We had flesh pots. We always had meat boiling and cooking in the pots. We had cucumbers. We had leeks and melons. We had all of these nice things. But this is almost no time after they came out of Egypt. Okay, he's talking about here when he says that they said, can God furnish a table in the wilderness? They began to question God, why did you bring us out of our safe haven? Why did you bring us out of our little happy place into this wilderness? I think really your center column reference there will send you over to Exodus chapter 16 and like verses 1 through 3. It says that talking about the children of Israel, they took their journey from Elam, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after departing out of the land of Egypt. Okay, well, it looks to me like if you go back and you think about the Passover lamb in Exodus chapter 12, or just a few chapters earlier, God told them on the 14th day of the first month, is when you take out, or the 10th day of the first month, you take out the little lamb and you select the lamb, and then you slay him on the 14th day of the first month. Well, here we are, we're on the 15th day, didn't it say the 15th day of the second month? We're only 1 month into the journey. They've only come out of Egypt, it's only been a month. They saw the plagues, okay? They saw all the plagues that God put upon the Egyptians. And yet there the Israelites were living and dwelling amongst the Egyptians, and none of the plagues affected the Israelites. They saw the miracles that God did. They saw how that God brought them out. It hasn't been but a few weeks since God brought them through the Red Sea. Now, I mean, I think that if God would have led you and I through some journey where he parted the sea and we walked through on dry ground, wouldn't you think we'd probably remember that for a long time? I don't think you'd ever forget it. But here it is, a month later after they've come out, and look what they're doing. The whole congregation of the children of Israel began to murmur against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and when we did eat bread to the full. You have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. So what did the Israelites do? They began to murmur and they began to complain about God immediately after seeing the miracles that he did. But I want you to know this morning, I mean, I just think about myself. I think about how myself, I am not so dissimilar to some of those forefathers in the way they acted. I feel like there's been times in my life when I have all too quickly forgotten the miracles that God has done for me in my life. The ones that I've seen. The things that I've seen God do. The goodness and the love and the mercy and the grace that God has extended to me in my life. I feel like there's been times I've all too quickly forgotten about that. I'm not real dissimilar to some of these forefathers who went to Moses and Aaron and started murmuring and complaining a month after they left and after seeing all of the miracles. They said, "Can God furnish a table in the wilderness?" Well, how about you this morning, beloved? What do you think about that? How would you answer that question? If somebody were to ask you, "Can God furnish a table in the wilderness?" What would you think about that? What would you tell them? What would you tell somebody who asked you that question? Would you be able to look back on your life? Would you be able to think back along the circumstances so far of your life? And would you be able to say God has furnished a table many times in your life and provided many things for you? I'll tell you, I would be able to do that. I feel like I would be able to now. Yes, there's been many times when I feel like my faith was weak and I let God down, and I should have remembered the great things he's done for me. But I'll tell you, if somebody would ask me that question right now, I would answer with a wholeheartedly, yes, God can furnish that table. I would answer in the affirmative. I would hope you can as well this morning. Can God furnish a table in the wilderness? Asaph goes on to write about, here's some of the things God did, even though it had only been a month since he took them through the Red Sea and he destroyed the entire army of Pharaoh that were chasing them and causing them harm and damage. He destroyed the whole army. It's only been a month, and here they are murmuring again. But what did God do? He says, "Behold, he smote the rock," in verse 20. "He smote the rock that the waters gushed out and the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for his people?" Therefore the Lord heard this, and he was wroth. And so a fire was kindled against Jacob, and anger came up against Israel, because they believed not in God, and they trusted not in his salvation. Though he had commanded the clouds from above, and opened the doors of heaven, and had rained down manna upon them to eat, and had given them of the corn of heaven, man did eat angels' food. Have you ever noticed that verse before? You ever noticed that statement that says the manna that God provided? God literally rained bread down from heaven overnight. His people murmured and they said, "Can you furnish a table in the wilderness? You've brought us out here from our comfort zone. We don't have anything. Can you give us water? We're thirsty. We don't have anything to drink." What did God do? He had Moses to smite the rock, and what happened? The water began to flow out of the rock. Began to flow out of the rock in great abundance, and they had water to drink. They said, "We're hungry. Can you give us bread?" What did God do? He started raining manna down from heaven overnight every morning for 40 years while they wandered around in the wilderness. The children of Israel got up every single morning. They walked outside, and what did they do? They picked up an omer's worth of manna that God had dropped from heaven above. You ever notice, though, that the psalmist here says that that was angels' food? He said it's angels' food, the corn of heaven. And he says he sent a meat to the full. He said he caused an east wind to blow in the heaven, and by his power, he brought in the south wind, and he rained flesh also upon them as dust, and feathered fowls like the sand of the sea. And he let it fall in the midst of their camp, round about their habitations. What's he talking about? He's talking about the quail that God sent in the evenings. You know, the Israelites were big complainers. They murmured against God. Even though God had just did miracles and God is there leading them day and night, there's a projection of God's glory in by leading by a pillar of fire by the day and a pillar by night and a pillar of a cloud by day. And they can see that, and they're murmuring against God. They ask for food. God gives them the bread in the mornings. That's a very interesting story in itself, isn't it? When you go over to Exodus and you read about that manna and God's provision there, very interesting to me. But then they ask for flesh. Can God give us some flesh? You know, we'd like to have some flesh because we remember in Egypt we had our flesh pots. They were always full. We always had meat to eat. So God says, I'll give you flesh. You remember he calls the quails to fly in by an east wind. Every evening the quails flew in the midst of the camp there. And in one of the places, I think maybe in the book of Numbers, it says that the quails were stacked up 2 cubits high. In other words, about 36 inches or about 1 yard's worth of quail all around the camp. And the Israelites had that to eat. They had fresh meat to eat. They had bread in the morning that filled them up. And then God caused the water to flow out of the rocks. What more can your God do? And yet, what did they do? They murmured and complained. I'll tell you, God's people today were probably not a real dissimilar sometimes than these Israelites. But Asaph is writing about them, and he's writing about how easy it is to forget what God has done. He let it fall in the midst of their camp, and they did eat, and they were well filled, and he gave them their own desire, and they were not estranged from their lust, but while their meat was yet in their mouths, the wrath of God came upon them and slew the fattest of them and smote down the chosen men of Israel. For all this they sinned still, and they believed not for his wondrous works. So we see what the great propensity was for some of the forefathers of Israel. Can you see the need of what is on Asaph's heart and what Asaph has been burdened with by the Holy Spirit to try to remind God's people of how important it is that we teach our children about the greatness of God and all of the various times in life when he has brought us through difficult circumstances and the great deliverances God has provided for every single one of us? It's an imperative, my friends, that we continue to teach our children and remind one another about that. Otherwise, this world will cause us to forget so soon. And lest you and I become complainers and murmurers like some of the children of Israel did. Do we not serve a great God this morning? Has he not blessed you in your life? Has he not brought you through difficult times? Have you ever felt like the enemy had you surrounded on all sides? And has he not brought you through and you look back and you say, God was there with me? Are there not times in your life that has happened? Is that not your claim? Is that not your song this morning that God has delivered you in every circumstance of life? I believe that he has. And our expectation should be that he will always do that. That's the God that we serve this morning. The very same God. You know, you would think that maybe through time and is maybe through the reading of the scriptures and that God's people teaching these things to our children and to our grandchildren and they in turn teaching them to their children and so on and so forth and passing these wonderful things down through the ages, you would think that God's people would always have learned and that we would have had many lessons learned from this. But I'm not so sure because I'm going to turn over to Luke chapter 14 and I want to notice something that Jesus says here in a parable. I'm in Luke chapter 14 and I want to start with verse 16. Then said he unto him, a certain man made a great supper and bade many. And he sent his servants at supper time to say to them that were bidden, come, for all things are now ready. And they all with one consent began to make excuse. The first said unto him, I've bought a piece of ground, and I must needs go and see it. I pray thee, have me excused. And another said, I've bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to prove them. I pray thee, have me excused. And of course, the third one says, I have married a wife, therefore I cannot come. And so that servant came, and he showed his Lord these things. And then the master of the house, being angry, said to his servant, go out quickly into the streets and lanes of the city, and bring in hither the poor, the maimed, the halt, and the blind. Jesus says, in this parable that he's speaking of here, he says that there was a man that prepared a great supper. You know, sometimes, years ago, somebody said something to me about Southerners using the word supper instead of dinner. And I said, I had to refer him to this verse. I said, well, Jesus used it. It's probably okay if we do. But he's given a parable here, and he says that a man made a great supper, and he bade many. That means he invited many people. But the first thing that happened is very quickly, 3 of the people that he invited, they all said they were too busy to come. They had various things here in this world that were taking up their time and their energy and taking up their attention, and they had things going on, and they were not able to come to this great supper that this man had prepared and had invited them to. And so the man that prepared the supper, he says, okay. He says, go back out into the city and go look for these type of people. The people who are poor, maimed, halt, and blind. He says, go and invite them. Well, guess what? When the servant did that, they all came. All the people that were poor, who didn't have anything, who were not burdened down with the cares of this world, they had time to come and experience and enjoy the great supper that was made. Isn't it interesting that the first 3 people who refused the invitation and said they were too busy, they all gave excuses. That's the word that Jesus used. They gave reasons, and they says, please excuse me from coming, but Jesus said they gave excuses. And that's really what they were. I mean, and none of them, if you go and you look at them in just a little bit of detail, none of them even made sense. I mean, who's going to buy oxen without checking them out first? Okay? And who's going to do that? Who's going to buy land sight unseen and then going to have to go see it after you buy it? You see, they didn't make any sense. They were excuses. But you know what? If you think about it, the very people that refused to come to the supper and they missed the great benefit of this great supper that was made for them, they missed it all. They missed out on the benefits of it because they were too consumed with worldly things. That's what happened. It's like in that other parable, the parable of the sower, where Jesus said that some of the seed fell among thorns, and the thorns of this world, the thorns grew up and it choked out the word, it choked out the seed, and it did not perform, did not amount to anything. And then later on, when Jesus explained that parable to his followers and his disciples there, he said those thorns represented the cares and the riches and the cares of this world that got in the way, and therefore the word of God could not prosper, could not grow properly. Well, this is the very same thing here. These people are so consumed with all of their assets and the things that they're able to buy and purchase, they're consumed with that, and they're missing out on a great supper that someone has provided for them. Can God furnish a table in the wilderness? If somebody asked you that this morning, I hope that you could answer in the affirmative. Can he furnish a table if you're in the middle of a wilderness? There's nothing else there. Can God feed you? Can he clothe you? The Israelite shoes never wore out for 40 years. They wandered and they never wore out for 40 years. You remember that? It's hard to buy a good pair of tennis shoes now that'll last you more than 6 months. God caused water to come out of the rock in abundance. He gave them bread. He gave them flesh. What more could he do? He gave them safety from their enemies. Can he furnish a table? I believe the Lord here in this parable, when he's talking about a great supper and that's been provided and the invitations have been sent out, I think the great supper is the table that the Lord provides here in his church for you and I today. As we come to the Lord's house and we come to this place that God has established for us, and he has welcomed us with open arms. You know what God literally does when his children come to the house of worship? Does not God lay out a feast before us? Doesn't God put the spread out before you and I of the gospel feast? And he brings it and he puts out a table and he invites us to come in and to partake and to enjoy of it. This is where God's people are fed, is in the house of God. I know we've talked about that before. Yeah, I know we can have our special little times and we feel like our heart does a little happy little pitter-patter when we're by ourselves and we're in certain places, maybe in nature, and we have a little special moment with the Lord. Those are nice. I have those too. I enjoy those. But this is where we're fed. It's God's house. God has designed it where you and I are fed. Our spirits and our souls are fed in this place because God puts out the table. God furnishes the gospel table here in the gospel meal. I'm afraid that there's too many of God's little children today that are missing out on this gospel feast because they're too consumed with things of the world. And if you know, I believe this morning that if you and I are not careful, we may end up that way sometime. You and I must guard against becoming too distracted with things of the world and our possessions and our material goods and whatnot. We get too caught up and too consumed in that. It'll take our focus off of the feast here that we're supposed to be enjoying. It'll get in our way and we'll give excuses and we'll miss out like these did. Isn't it interesting though who Jesus told the servant to go and invite? Go to the poor. Go to the people who are crippled, who are maimed, who are halt. The poor in spirit, people who are blind, go to them and offer for them to come in. And it looks to me like all of them came. All of them were humbled in their heart and they came. And the servant said, Lord, it is done as thou hast commanded, and yet there is room. And the Lord said unto the servant, go out into the highways and hedges and compel them to come in that my house may be filled. For I say unto you that none of those men which were bidden shall taste of my supper. You know who it is that enjoys the Lord's blessings the most? It's the people oftentimes who have the very least in this world. They don't have the boat anchors of all of these material goods to drag us down and to consume our time and consume our minds and our energy. Aren't we just a collection of plain, simple, common people here at Andrew Church? I mean, I feel like that's what we are. We're just common people. You know, the reason we have so many of us here and God's been so pleased to feed us and to bless us is because we have not let the world get in the way. We've always kept this day open, the day that God made for worship, and he sanctified it and said, this is my Sabbath day. We've always kept it holy and sanctified. And we try to come and present ourselves and to worship our God according to his commandments in this book. And God has been pleased to bless us and to bless our families. I'm just afraid that there's too many of God's little children in this day and age that are like these others, though they've gotten caught up with all of their possessions and with their incomes and the things that they feel they need to buy and all of their investments, and they're caught up with that and they can't come to the supper, the great supper that's been provided. I submit to you this morning, beloved, that God can furnish a table anywhere he wants to. He's not hindered. His arm is not too short. He can furnish a table for his people anytime he desires, and this house is where he regularly lays out the gospel feast for his people. It's the house of God. You know what I hope we'll do this morning as we leave here today and we go about our lives and our Christian walk here throughout this coming week? I hope we'll always remember to keep emphasizing and teaching our children about these things. Teaching about our God and all the deliverances that he's made. Yes, he caused water to come out of the rock. That really happened. It flowed out of the rock in abundance. Manna from heaven really did fall. The children of Israel really did go out and pick it up in the mornings. The quail really did fall all around the camp. God did all those things. God destroyed the enemies of Israel. God protected them and he blessed them. He's the same God today. And he went before them day and night, leading and guiding them along the way. I still submit, beloved, that he still does that for his people today. How about we just be diligent? How about we be firm in our convictions to always want to teach our children and our grandchildren and be an encouragement and teach our friends and family members about the greatness that God has done for you and I in our lives? You know, Satan's always trying to discourage God's people. Satan is always trying to get us to forget about these things. Why don't we do just as if the psalm writer Asaph did as he wrote this psalm, and he was very urgent upon us that we not forget these things, but we continue to remind one another of the greatness of our God and how he is able to save us all the days of our lives. May God richly bless you and keep you this morning.